accession number 28624, reel 2.
Set up, there wasn't much in it anyway, but it, anything in your locker was could become the subject of an inspection as well. You know, your toothbrush, no matter what it was, your boot polish and everything else had to be sitting there, tin facing whichever way it was meant to face. And they were just a big part of your day, but the preparation was the entire evening, the day before.
Was there a certain pattern for laying things out in your locker or your bed?
Absolutely, oh yes. And from left to right, front to back, and the beds, the sheets had to be done as they are in hospitals, and everything had to be just so. The fold over of the sheet or the blanket would have to be so many inches, and not just tidily turned over. It had to be exact and precise. And all this, of course, yeah, with a view to producing uniformity, because that's what a unit has to become. They all have to be thinking and doing things exactly the same way. So you never knew the reason at the time, I don't think, but you see it now.
And do you recall any shortcuts that you maybe did, you know, to help you with your kit inspection or anything?
No, I'm not shortcuts, but I think, you know, that there used to be, with a view to sort of shortening the process, if you could, you know, two or three of you would get together, and one might be doing the boots that night, the other might be doing all the brasses, his, and mine, and someone else's, and you work like that as a team. But not really shortcuts, because I don't think there was ever an opportunity for a shortcut, and if you tried to find one, you'd be discovered the next day. But perhaps, you know, working together would speed things up a little.
Part two. You were explaining about your daily kit inspection. Did your weekly one differ from your daily one?
No, absolutely not. Only insofar as this time it wouldn't be the platoon sergeant or one of the training corporals, it would be carried out by Major Cross, the camp commandant. And he would be followed by the company sergeant major, followed by the sergeant, followed by three corporals. And so you were being inspected by about six people, and that, but no different. I mean, the layout was precisely the same, and it just took on a little more importance and formality to it all, and took longer, of course, because you never knew which order, which hut he was going to first or whatever, but there you would be standing and waiting with someone keeping a lookout, last minute adjustments to blankets, kit, floor, the stove, anything. But just the formality was greater.
Okay. And so you worked as a team, did you, within the Nissen hut?
Oh, yes. Now, that was very important, whether it was as a team helping each other with kit or as a team. We just had to decide for ourselves who was doing the shower room, who was doing the latrines, who was doing the floor, who was doing the stove, who was doing the windows. So you had to act as a team. I mean, and no one would let the rest of the team down, because if at the end of the day, at the end of the inspection, we got a bad chit, and there was detention, weekend detention perhaps, or extra fatigues, or whatever the punishment was, everyone in the room got it. So A, no one wanted extra fatigue, and B, you certainly couldn't be the one who's if the latrines had been the reason for detention and you had been responsible for those latrines, you'd let the rest down.
What does that actually mean, fatigues? What is a fatigue?
Fatigues are just jobs. Now, a fatigue is a job. It might be peeling potatoes in the cookhouse. It might be scrubbing out the guard room. It might be just any job that could be found. There are always so many jobs around to be done, and they're really mostly to do with cleaning. But a fatigue might be anything, but it's a job you're given to do. And very often they relate it to the cookhouse. The cook always decided that he was short-staffed, and his assistant cooks were, of course, helping him to cook, and they needed help with preparing. So potato peeling was certainly one, but cleaning out those greasy pans and stoves in the cookhouse was one guaranteed fatigue that you would get.
Did you ever have to do
it? Oh yes, indeed. I mean, the system was such that no matter how immaculate your presentation of your billet and your kit and everyone else's kit within the billet and your lockers, no matter how immaculate, they were going to do you anyway, just to sort of show you what life's all about. So you could be in perfect nick, but you'd be under tension and fatigue. So I most certainly scrubbed out a lot of greasy pans in the cookhouse.
And how do you think you reacted to that, you know, this form of punishment?
Well, they're never pleased to receive these extra duties, but you took them in great good spirit, really, because it was all part of the system. And very soon, you knew what the system was. You knew you were going to cop it at some stage, and if you didn't, it was welcome relief. But you were actually expecting to be given extra duties at some stage. So it wasn't a burden at all, really, just tiresome.
And how do you think you reacted as well to the lack of privacy?
The sooner you get used to that, the better, and you do. I think, you know, to start with, you recognize that there's going to be no privacy. I mean, there just isn't. Everything about the billet is open. You can't put lockers to any other side to sort of shield you from the next chap, because the lockers have to stay where they are. And so you are in an open billet. The showers are all open. Wherever you go, everything is open. And you quite soon get used to that. And it's important that you should, because it's not the 16 weeks. Life in the army is all about lack of privacy. You are just one of a unit, and you know, when you get to your battalion, there are 700 of you, and you're all in that big unit together. Later on in life, when you marry, you're all in the quarters, and somehow, you know, there never seems to be privacy, and you don't look for it and you don't expect it, so the sooner you get used to it, the better.
And what about guard duties? Had you ever to do any guard?
Yes, indeed. I think that came after week 6 or something. You were eligible for guard duties because your drill had to be up to standard, and that probably, I think it was something like 6 weeks. So for the first period, you weren't doing any guard duties. You were confined to barracks anyway, but not guard duties. And then after about 6 weeks, you started to do those, and your turn would come around at least once a week. I think there were 2 or 3 squads training there, and the guard would be made up of 6, I think, on the night guard for the 12-hour shift, and your turn would come around probably once a week, something like that. And that was just part of your duties as well. I mean, you know, you would be on guard from 6 till 6 when the regimental police, depot police, would take over. They did the guard room for the 12 hours of the day. And the trainees would do it for the 12 hours of the night. And then at 6 o'clock you went back to your billet and started your day's duties, whatever they were.
So did you not get any sleep?
Yes, you did get sleep. You did 2 stags of guard duty. In other words, you did 2 hours on and 4 hours off. So if you were on at 6 to 8, you would then be able to sleep till midnight, and then you'd be on 2 to 4, and then you'd at midnight to 2, and then you could sleep from 2 to 6. So you were on duty for 4 hours out of the 12. But then the rest, you could do what you liked and get some sleep if you could.
Okay. And what did you actually guard? Were you guarding, you know, was it up a perimeter fence, or was it the guardhouse?
Yes, you were billeted in the guard room for that night, for those 12 hours. And the guard room was beside the main gate. So the gate would close at 6 o'clock in the evening and would only be opened by the guard to allow authorised people in and out. And so that would be manned all night. And there was also a patrol going round the perimeter fence, just armed with a pick helve, as I remember, was what you had, and a whistle, probably. And you would be going around that. So that was patrolled periodically.
And what did you say they had, a pick?
A pick helve, just the shaft of a... the wooden handle of a pick, which was your club. And you also had a rifle, but no ammunition, of course. So this pick helve was more important than your rifle. And a whistle, I think, to alert the rest of the camp, who would all be fast asleep anyway.
Do you recall if there was ever any circumstance when someone had any problems?
No, I can't, not in my time there. There was always the apparent or the alleged threat of the IRA, but there hadn't been any attempts by them to get into, certainly, the Maresfield camp. There wouldn't have been, and certainly no civilians ever attempted to come in. No, but it was necessary to do it anyway, but I remember no incidents.
Okay. You've mentioned drilling as well. Can you give us a brief description of what it meant to drill?
Yeah, well, that's your parade ground staff on the tarmac, and when you form up as a squad for the first time, three ranks, and you are taught to march in time, and then, of course, as you're a trainee, every time you march around camp, if you're going to the cookhouse, you are marching, you're not strolling, and if you're going along there with a buddy, you're marching in step, and you learn how to salute, and then you sort of learn to drill in formations, and the various formations, and then your rifle drill comes into play after the initial period, and you just start to look like a body of smart men as opposed to 30-odd civilians wandering around.
Did it come easy to you?
Oh, yes, it did. Yeah, yes, I think it did. The quality of drill instruction, the drill sergeants were extremely highly trained, and they were also, I remember, most amusing men, because they pick people out, of course, make great fun of them, but it's all done with terrific humour and great wit too. I mean, they were that's what I remember most, I think, about the army, and certainly the basic training bit, the great good humour that was on display the whole time.
Okay. And did you get any sport whilst you were doing your basic training?
Yes, even basic training. We had games on Wednesday afternoon, as is typical of the army. It was games afternoon, and we had at that depot. I was there summer and into autumn, so we had just the usual sports. We had a rugby team, which I played. We had a football team. I was keen on that. We had a good cricket side. It was a small depot, but they took part in the Southern Command tournaments and competitions, and cup competitions. We had a swimming team even, and that was an opportunity just to have fun at Wednesday afternoon. And compete, because it was competitive stuff the whole time.
Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. Just loved it. It's why I joined. I mean, the fact is, I joined because I'm such a keen games player, and I knew the army was going to supply me with the time and the opportunity to enjoy games. And that really was one of the most important incentives for me to join. I mean, it certainly, I had no thoughts of a career. I didn't even know what the pay was when I joined. I had no idea until I got my first week's pay what we were going to get. It was all about games and just being with a bunch of good, fit friends.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how much the pay was?
Well, I think I do. It was a weekly pay parade that we had. You had to march up and come to a halt and salute and take your pay away from the pay officer. And I think I got, it would have been a gross £4 a week, I'm pretty sure. £4 and perhaps 2 shillings, I don't know, something like that.
A reasonable pay at the time?
It seemed all right, yeah. You had to pay for your blanco and your brasso and toothbrush, shaving cream, all that sort of thing with it, but it still left you with something. And as you weren't allowed out of barracks anyway, there was no way you could spend it.
And how did you feel about getting kept in barracks?
Well, that was all right too. You know, what you do is just look forward all the more to the time when you are allowed to go out, because it wasn't for the whole 16 weeks, nothing like, I think it was about 6 or 8 weeks, there was a period when they decided you could go out looking as though you were a bit smarter than you had been when you came in. And so I think about halfway through we were allowed out in the evening or the weekend, certainly.
And had you to wear a uniform when you went out then?
No, we didn't. When you're the first period, which I think was 8 weeks, when you're confined, you're in uniform all the time. You're not allowed to wear your civvies. They're hanging up in your locker, but you're not allowed to wear them. So you're in camp the whole time, either in denims or battle dress in the evening. But when we were allowed out, it was that point too that you were allowed to start wearing civvies when you were off duty.
Did it feel good?
Yes, it did. Yeah, you can get tired of denims the whole time.
And before you were allowed out, was there anywhere on camp that you could have a beer or anything?
Yeah, we had our naffy, and you were certainly, they served beer. The naffy was open for, well, you know, it served food apart from anything else, and you could get an egg and chips or whatever, whatever you could afford and whatever they were making. But they supplied food, which you bought, and they certainly had beer. And, I don't remember too much of that being consumed. People were keeping fit. I remember people drinking a lot of milk. I don't know why, but a pint of milk was a popular order with an apple tart or something like that. So, but you could get a beer.
Okay. And when you did get out, once you were allowed out, can you remember any of the things that you did? Did you go to the films or did you go to...
Yes, we... if it was an evening and you had to get back before, I forget what time you had to be back in by, and it was probably 10 o'clock or something like that, you couldn't actually go far. We didn't have a car. So Maresfield, the local village, was about a mile and a half away, so it was just a stroll along there, have something and come back. So it was a pub, really. Sussex is filled with lovely pubs, and there were one or two in different directions just in the middle of the country. So that's what we were doing, really. To go to a cinema or something like that was a longer trip. The nearest place was Uckfield, and just beyond that, Brighton. But those, you might keep that for a weekend, and we had the odd trip like that. But that was, you couldn't do that in an evening.
And did the locals accept you? You know, did the civilian population accept the army personnel?
Yes, they did. Yeah, they most certainly did. A number of them worked in the camp anyway on some sort of civilian basis. There were a few civilian posts, and they were just so used to the depot. It had been set up during the war and was now no longer wartime. I think it's a training depot. They were most welcoming. No any problems for them.
Okay. And was this camp all male, or were females there as well?
No, all male.
How did you feel about that?
Well, again, you know, a bit tiresome, really, and but you get used to that as you do to anything. No, there were. I don't think there was even a civilian member of staff. There were one or two clerical people I remember in the admin office who were civilians, but they were male. I don't think there was a girl in the camp anywhere, and certainly no trainee girls, all male.
She accepted it.
Yes, no choice.
So whilst you were doing your training, was there tests at any point? You know, were the men tested? Were you tested?
I don't think so. I think not tests as such, certainly no written tests. You were being tested in a sense all the way along, because insofar as the training NCOs and platoon commander would be really watching you, and you know, if your physical performance was faltering in any way, they would spot that. They would just see that. Physical tests were set. I mean, we had to do the usual 9 miles in 2 hours with full kit and so on, and you would do that every fortnight as a test, I suppose. That didn't seem to be an exam, but no written test, no oral test as such. If you weren't handling your weaponry well enough, they would be seeing that. But there would come a time, probably halfway through, I think, the 8 week bit when we were allowed out to camp, that one or two of the squad who had not failed a test but had just been seen by the supervisors to not keeping up with the rest, and they might be back squatted, and one or two were, and they would fall into the squad that had started behind us. So they would just take longer to get through their basic training. But I don't remember a test as such.
Okay. I think that's what I was trying to say. Did everyone, you know, get through it? They obviously had a selection.
Yeah, and there was a slight hiccup for one or two. Out of the 30, I would think most of us got there, but perhaps two or three were back squatted, I remember.
Okay. So as you were progressing through this 16-week period, it's coming near to the end. Were you being told that you were then going to go forward for the officer?
I was aware that a date was being set for me to attend WASB. They were regular things, but you know, a date had to be booked to get you into the system. So, but that was all. I mean, I was just waiting to hear when that date would be. But it would be certainly a few weeks after the passing out. So what we were looking forward to was not that. That didn't feature in my mind. You know, what was ahead of me was passing out, which would be terrific, and an automatic 2 weeks leave, which I was looking forward to. And then I would be told at some stage when I had to turn up for my WASB. And I would be remaining behind, because at the end of passing out, all my chums, we would all have 2 weeks leave, would all then come back, and then my buddies were all going to be posted off to different parts of the world in the intelligence corps. I would be losing them, and I would just be staying on at the camp as a sort of helper to the admin office or whatever. And that's what I was looking forward to.
Do you recall your passing out?
Yes, I do. That was a very important day, because after you passed out, apart from the leave, you were given a lanyard, which was something that went over your shoulder. I forget how it went in. It went into your battle dress tunic pocket and slipped around, and it was a green lanyard, and that meant you were a trained soldier. So that was a very significant thing, and we all received that after it. I can't remember who took the salute, but it was a very important day when you march past, and as you march past the second time, you are then a trained soldier. And that very significant day. And the senior officer of some sort, I can't remember who it was, took the salute, and it was a day when parents were invited to come along and watch their son pass out. Mine didn't make the trip, but it was a long way from Aberdeen. But then, you know, there would be a little meal in the cookhouse for parents and soldiers alike, and then off we'd go on 2 weeks' leave.
So it was quite an important occasion.
Most important day. Okay. Yes, it really was.
And did you wear your... Was it your number one?
No, we battle dress was our parade kit. That was as smart as you could be in those days. Yeah, but it was smart, and yeah, we all looked very well. I don't think I've got a photo of me in that, but that was a big day.
Okay, were you inspected before you went on parade?
We most certainly were. We were inspected before we went on parade by just about everyone. And then, of course, we were inspected by the officer taking the salute. But his is an informal inspection. He just actually walks past you, talks to one or two of you, but he's not really inspecting you. That's all been done by everyone else, including Major Cross.
And this lanyard...
Yes.
Is it made up of material or cord?
Yes, it's cord. That's right. And depending on... it's very much a core thing. I don't think it's an infantry thing at all. I think I'm right in saying that. And the lanyard for the intelligence corps was a green one. And Remy and Royal Engineers had a red and blue one. And the corps all have their lanyard to show you're trained.
And did you feel like a proper soldier that day?
Exactly. That's exactly what you do. And it's a very significant thing to wear something to show. Because the other two squads, by that time, there were two squads behind us. So we were the qualified people, and they were just trainees. And, you know, it was an important thing.
And do you think you had changed from this boy or young man who had went in 16 weeks before?
Oh, yes. No, a huge change. I mean, you know, your demeanor changes. You know, they are... you know, I just do remember being in Aberdeen before I went down there. You know, you stroll around Union Street, perhaps with your friends, and you do sort of stroll around. Suddenly, just a few weeks later, you don't stroll. You're just a different sort of chap. You know, your demeanour is evident. I mean, I remember my parents telling me I just looked different, and I knew I was different. It's a change that. Though the training is short and sharp, you know, you're having a great deal of fun too, and you know, you're not aware that you're really changing, but you do change.
Okay.
Yeah, for the better too.
Okay. So after the passing out parade, did you get your leave right away?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, passing out parade, I remember, finished with this little sort of lunch occasion, and then you were free to... You went back, took out of your locker whatever you wanted. It was still your bed, still your locker, because you would be coming back after 2 weeks' time. Just pack up whatever you want and head off to the train, nearest train, or go wherever you wanted to go. And I came back to Aberdeen. Yeah.
Okay. Did you get a warrant?
Yes, you do. Yes, absolutely. Forgot that. Yes, you got a leave warrant because it was leave. It was formal. You were still in the army, 2 weeks' leave. And you get a leave warrant. I think we used to get about three leave warrants a year, but that was certainly one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did these warrants cover your rail travel?
Rail travel is what it was, yes, from the nearest station to your destination station. And it didn't matter where you're going. I mean, I'm coming a long way from Sussex to Aberdeen. Some people weren't going very far, one chap going to Portsmouth, but wherever you were going, you were entitled to go. You could go up to Wick, and the army still paid for that rail warrant. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.